Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Joining us on the line is Musi Mani. It's absolutely wonderful to check in with you to see how you're doing. How are you?
Hey, good morning and good morning to fellow South Africans. And it's the first time I'm speaking to you this year, so I suppose it's still well within
exactly.
The Constitution to say I wish you a very strong and a blessed 2021. I'm doing really well. I'm doing well, Howard, and it's great to be on your show.
It's absolutely wonderful to speak to you. Yeah, I think because it's still January, you definitely can wish us all the best for 2021. And you know what? I feel like this year we all need it, so it's fine. I think we can keep doing that. Just keep reassuring each other as we get through the year. How has the last couple of months been for you? Very, very challenging times for us all.
Absolutely. You know, I think just on a personal level, I've had a baby, so the last couple of months
have been hands full,
as it were. So that's a personal. But I feel like I've done my bit as Tumamina to try and make sure that as times are tough, we can add a bit of life to the situation. But more than anything, it's also been difficult to watch the stress that South Africans are facing. I think as a nation, we find some very, very difficult days ahead. Not only as I watch families lose loved ones to COVID, I've also watched people lose their livelihoods. And at the same time as all of that, we've all felt disempowered as we've now been sitting at home watching acts of corruption on television not being prosecuted. So I think on both the personal and the public space, it's been difficult. But at the same time as all of that, a very good friend of mine said something very encouraging to me. He said, leaders do not practice for practice matches. We practice for when matches become tough. And I think now is a time for leadership to arise, whether it's in business, in public service. And so at the same time as all of that, I felt an incredible resolve. It's given me time to think and work out what needs to be done. And I'm really, really, at the same time as all of that, optimistic about tomorrow and the opportunities that tomorrow face. I think this is the great reset. Perhaps maybe we wouldn't have wanted it like this, and we wouldn't wanted it on steroids.
Well, we never choose. We never choose these things. So, do you think? And my sense is that South Africa could be heading towards a tipping point. The failure of government to lead around the vaccines, the corruption that you've just referred to, the corruption during the pandemic. Do you think that we are getting to a point where South Africans will say, that's it? You know, now it's enough.
I can feel it, and I can see it, because I think the broad scenario that we face is that people are sick and tired of the body politic. I really think that they're looking at it with absolute distaste, and more than anything, mistrust. They feel like leadership is self-interested. So I think most people, when I speak to them, are saying to me, we need to find a new way and a new alternative. And that's what's been the investment of work. The second issue is, I think when you talk about the tipping point, you know, when you think about the end of apartheid, some of it had to do with political actors, but some of it had to do with the basic bands and sense. The economy simply could not support apartheid anymore. It just couldn't. And I think there's an opportunity here now, if you think about the state of governance, where the captured and the corrupted state, the fiscus cannot support that for much longer, and therefore it requires collapse. So I do think this is an opportunity for change. And then thirdly, I think as we now all have to think about what our society looks like, the reform is happening. We all now know one of the things that maybe is a blessing in disguise is that South Africans live in different pockets all across the country. And now for the first time, we've realized that our health is dependent on the health of the most vulnerable. You cannot sit back and say, well, what happens in Alexandra is irrelevant to me. Because if infections are going up in Alex, they're going to go up in Sandton, they're going to go up in any community you like.
Absolutely.
So I think suddenly we've had to think, actually, we're all in this together. No more thinking about it's your healthcare and I'm private or this or that. It's that South Africans are together. So to me, Howard, I think there's a real momentum towards reform across all sectors of society. And that to me is a positive. And we can truly build that One South Africa. I love the tagline of your show, One Radio Show, One Nation, because that's really what we're trying to build.
And did this influence your decision to back independence in the future?
Well, I think globally, first of all, there's a genuine call for direct democracy. I think citizens all over the world are tired of having political leaders imposed upon them and then leave. Secondly, I think the best way to effect change isn't just adding another political party. For that factor, I know we've got 50 in the country. You just keep adding to the list. Nothing genuinely changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I think more than anything, we are going into local government where someone has to be able to tell me that a street X in Bedford View doesn't have electricity, and that they are more specific. You can say to me in Houghton, this is the situation, et cetera, et cetera. And I think citizens are hankering for that. They are saying, we want to be able to hold the people we accountable, and we want to directly speak to them. So I think to me, it's a no-brainer in the sense that we can be able to create an appropriate platform to be able to directly elect people. The best way I always explain it to people is like, it's like Uber. When Uber came onto the market, Uber do not own the cars. They do not own the drivers, but they ultimately have a service standard for what an Uber driver does, so that when you get into one, you know what is to be expected. You know what the standards are, and you know that it has to take you to your destination. And in the same way, if we had a move all across the country to say, let community X be able to elect this particular person to represent them and know that they are accountable to them, but ultimately no political party owns them. All we just simply are providing is standards for them and training so that they can campaign and win. So to me, I just think it's the surest way to be able to limit the power of political parties, but restore the power back to communities. So I think it's a war worth fighting.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because if you look at the American system, it's a perfect example of that, that no matter what the issue is, it might be a health issue, Democrats have one view and one, one opinion, and Republicans have another opinion. And the fact that it doesn't seem to be dissent within that, that you can't have a Republican with a view on healthcare that is more aligned with Democrats or the other way around, tells us exactly how dangerous this almost clannish behavior is within politics, because then you don't have independent thought. And when you lose that, it really, really, the people of the country suffer, surely.
Undeniably. And I think in South Africa, we've seen so many examples of that. I mean, I can recall sitting in Parliament where everyone knew that this president is unfit for office. But they simply say, we will vote as a bloc because we're not scared of the voters. We're more scared of our party. And so what I think the other American example, which is quite helpful, is that in direct democracy, if you don't like one president, you vote another one in. And that's how you settle debate. So in some ways, I just do feel that the model, given the opportunity, we can then be able to say, actually, I'm accountable to the people. So that if the party says, for example, we need to expropriate without compensation, a leader, an individual, can be able to stand up and say, actually, my constituents who live in this community oppose that view. And they are entitled to hold that view and for me to give expression to their vote. So I think if we reform democracy and give it its impetus in direct democracy, we'll then be able to ensure that actually none of us get to sit and watch Zondo and feel like we have no power, because suddenly we could say, we want to call for an election and we think MP this or this person there must be removed. And imagine if all of the people who are implicated in the Zondo Commission were then had to face an election in their community. There's no way they'd continue in that manner. There's no way they'd be able to go, well, I must just carry on. And the Constitutional Court has given us a leeway towards that, and that it's backed independence, and it says that people can be able to represent people as individuals. And in local government, the practice has been established. If we give them the right infrastructure and work with them across the country, I sincerely believe that we could have towns that are run by different people with a vision that is built around a pact that works for the city. Mm.
Do you think it's opportune as well, because we seem to have this fractured ANC? And I want to qualify that, because I read a comment yesterday. Somebody said the most convenient thing the ANC has done is made us believe that there's two factions. Anything that goes wrong or anything that's corrupt, we just bin and we put in the corrupt ANC's area, not in the good ANC's area. So actually it's quite a good strategy. I don't know if it was deliberate or not, or it's just opportunistic. But do you think the fact that we've do have this perceived split of the ANC adds momentum to this notion that maybe parties should be broken up a little bit and we look at the best people to serve?
Yeah, I think it is both and. And I want to affirm what you just said. In fact, I wrote about it at the Daily Maverick to say that this whole idea, this story that puts the president as a victim and powerless against another faction within his own party is in fact a very beneficial strategy, because he can permanently be a victim, and yet he's the most powerful person in the country. He can fire anybody. The Constitution was written for Mandela, and those powers are given to the president, regardless of who. So so to me, I think there's a genius about it. But what's even more dangerous about that is that all of us now don't worry what happens in Parliament. We worry more what happens at NASREC. We worry more what happens at the NECs. South Africans watch that. They get glued to that because they know the decisions taken at the NEC can have direct consequences on their day-to-day living. Now, that's abnormal. It would be like following a party's own internal congress with its own internal investigation, but those are having consequences on people who didn't even vote for that party, let alone our members. That's why we need to break that, even just that principle alone, to say the president isn't elected at Lithuli House. The president is elected in Parliament. This is what the Constitution says. That actually investigations around corruption are not done in an integrity commission in a corner somewhere. They are done by the National Department of Public Prosecution, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, to me, we need to shift the power back to democratically elected institutions. And the only way we can do that is when either an MP or a councillor is able to say, even if the party wants us to act in this way, my first loyalty is to what is the community that elected me saying? If they are saying to me that the president is unfit for office, I must be willing to vote them out. So if you look at even the American system, many of the even Republicans who now have to back and support the new president do so knowing very well that whether they like it or not, they have to face up to their constituents. They have to face up to their communities. And the community eventually says to them, we think you voted like this on this issue. We don't agree with you. We will remove you. So I think, to me, if we can be able to do that, and the drafters of our constitution actually had that in mind. They had constituencies in mind. It's for that reason when the president is elected in parliament, they cease to be a member of parliament, because there was an in thinking that says we want direct elections of the president and direct elections of members of parliament. We're giving effect to that.
Absolutely. I'm chatting to One South Africa, One SA leader, Musi Mamani. I'd love to hear from you on 34519 or 061-895-1019. What is your view, and what would your approach be to the vaccine rollout in South Africa?
Look, firstly, I'm not conspiratorial about vaccines at all. I think that if there's a vaccine, that I know the government has messed this particular process up. I think there must be integrity to the process, and I think the government must own up to the people that they've really messed this one up. Mm-hmm. And I think we should deliver vaccines to people. The process must, in and of itself, require a partnership between the private sector and the public sector. I think it would be a miss to believe that the government can be able to deliver on such a massive undertaking, because that requires...
Well, they've hardly delivered a thing. I'd like to see some proof of what they have delivered before we trust them with a critical part of our health.
So I think we need to be able to create a partnership there where actually citizens have got options. Democracy is always about choice. Mm. If you want to go to your local clinic and get a vaccine, you should be able to do so, just in the same way as if your medical aid or whatever allows you the space to say you can come to this place at this time and get vaccinated, you should be able to do so. So that is the second thing. The third thing is, and I think to me, there have been many candidates that needed consideration. And I'm not here to say that ivermectin must be the drug that we all use, but I'm saying the research around it must be undertaken. It must, at least as a candidate.
Let the doctors decide if it's a good drug to use or not. Why make this a political standpoint? We saw it with hydroxychloroquine. It was then allowed, and doctors decided that it actually wasn't a drug of choice. Let them decide. They're at the front lines.
So then I think as far as the prioritization of rollout, we have to be intentional and make some strong decisions as a country. I think it's a crime. And I almost feel like for every frontline worker who dies at a time such as this serving the state, I think the presidency and the leadership there must account for it. Because frankly, it is a crime to not have provided frontline workers with a vaccine that has been broadly available. I can, the second phase of giving it to citizens is an important and crucial phase. But certainly for our nurses, our doctors, it is a complete crime that they don't die without a vaccine at the end of January, and doesn't look like they'll have one by the end of February. So I really think that in this regard, looking at State of the Nation on the 11th of February, the president best show up there with answers to those citizens, because a failure to do so will ultimately be a betrayal of citizens who have served this country in a very, very difficult time.
Before we let you go, what's the year ahead for Musi Mamani?
I'm really looking. We're going community to community. We're doing it in three phases. We're identifying ethical leaders who can stand in communities. So that will end in March. Secondly, we are rolling out a massive training program, because you don't want people who are going to go stand in council who don't have a clue how councils work or which laws actually govern that. So that will be in the second phase of making sure that we offer top-class training about ethical leadership. How do we change towns? What is accountability? What are all of those, and what are the values that we stand for? We've established a school of governance, so that will be in the second phase. And then the third phase is obviously heading towards this direct election bill. But I'm always very conscious about the fact that even I don't advance. One of the failures of political parties is that they fail for activism. So we ask everybody who's going to stand or participate to be an activist in their community. And so one of the things that we're focused on strongly is education. And so I'm rolling out a program where we can give blended learning centers for students all across the country, because I think education should be democratized, allow people to participate, that the best education should not be given only to wealthy South Africans. It should be given to everybody. And I think TIC allows us to break that divide, so that one day a child who lives in Dobsonville can get as quality education as a child who lives in Sandton. So all of that is something that we're working on. And then lastly, we've been working hard on entrepreneurs. I firmly believe those are the new heroes. Those are the struggle heroes, because right now, the crisis is going to be how well we create jobs. So we've created a number of platforms to support micro enterprise with venture capital, but also at a higher level, how do we ensure that we can support the entrepreneurial culture in this country? So it's a busy and a full year for me, but I really believe to bring the courage to bring change to this country requires that we not only change from the grassroots up, but make sure that we ultimately can bring democratic change in this nation.
Well, I wish you all the best, and I wish us all the best, because you really have some very, very important ambitions, critical ambitions for the country. Good luck, and certainly we'll keep checking in with you. That is Musi Mamani, a leader of One South Africa.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.